Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, joined today by Harriet Russell. How are you doing, Harriet?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Not too bad. And Algie Hall.
Hello there.
How are you?
Very good, thanks.
Good. And Happy New Year to all our listeners.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too. We've been off air, as it were, for a couple of weeks, whilst you've all been on holiday, which is nice because we had a very busy end of the year and we're about to have a busy start to the new year. But we're back and lots to talk about, but we're going to keep it tight today. We're going to talk next, aren't we, Harriet? Because they are the first of the retailers to report.
Yep, 2 days in. They didn't waste any time. January is a huge month for retailers anyway. We're going to have an absolute deluge of updates by the end of the month. But yeah, next kicked us off.
They did, and not in particularly pleasant style. But
no,
we'll come on to that. And we're going to talk tips because... Yep.
It's a big week for the tips.
It's the big week.
The tips of the year.
Tips of the year. It's our tips of the year issue. And not only do we release our tips for 2017, but we review our tips of 2016. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Yeah. So let's start with retail, because Christmas, everyone shops. It's the big time of the year when everyone makes all their money, all the retailers make all their money. Next has not exactly set the world on fire with its with the first trading update of the new year.
No, it had an incredibly difficult 2016 as a whole, and it unfortunately didn't get much better during the fourth quarter.
Got a little bit better.
It did. I mean, relative to the third quarter, yes. Overall, it's still not great. And the big sort of thorn in Next's side is the fact that full price sales aren't growing nearly as fast as they would like them to. In fact, they're in decline, although that decline did slow considerably towards the end of the year. But it's not what they want. And unfortunately, the big end of year seasonal sale also didn't go particularly well. Sales there were down 7%. So all in all, they've had to revise their profit guidance again. Again downwards, and the market did not take to it well.
No, I mean, Next has garnered a reputation over the years of putting out very gloomy prospects for trading and then smashing them.
Yeah.
And the shares would respond accordingly by jumping. But that pattern seems to have broken now.
Yeah, it really seems to have turned, which is a massive surprise, because I think Lord Wolfson's reputation was really quite stellar. They did particularly well through the directory business in light of the kind of online challenge that started to emerge in the mid-2000s.
Well, everyone said, you know, Next, well, they've had a directory, you know, catalogue for years, so they're perfectly positioned to become an online retailer.
Yeah, I mean, their distribution was set up for them. It was ready to go, whereas a lot of other companies, Debenhams, for example, had to start from scratch and very costly. Next never had that challenge. But I think the commentary yesterday was really focusing on the fact that since that point, they haven't really done much to modernise the business. They've sort of, in a way, it starts to feel like they've just sort of thought, well, we're okay. The rest of the high street have these awful problems. And because we have directory, because we have big warehousing set up and the back end system in place, we can kind of just chug along. And unfortunately, I think what often gets overlooked in retail a lot is people just don't seem to want the product.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, you could say, okay, the business structurally is in the right place.
Yeah.
Is it the product then?
I think it must be, because the big challenge that Next is going to have this year is really with prices. I mean, this is going to be something that affects retail as a whole, but Next were really among the most vocal last year about how they would have to put prices up in order to save margin.
Have they then kind of overestimated their ability to put their prices up?
You know,
we've got such a good product that, you know, people will pay for it, whatever we charge for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so full price sales started sliding in mid-2016. And at the time of the interim results, I really pointed this out in the ICVU. I said, if people aren't going to pay for full price product now...
No one wants to pay full price for anything anymore, isn't
it? Exactly. I mean, and if they're not going to pay for it now, what on earth is Next thinking when they think that customers will pay even higher prices midway through 2017? To me, it's just a strategy that isn't going to work. So, yeah, I have my doubts.
I think also Harriet makes a good point in one of the tips of the year that she's written, that it's these mid-market players, which are the people who can't sell at full prices, whereas there are companies online who have an advantage and who have really strong brands, which... actually can still increase your proportion of sales they're making, which are at full prices. And then perhaps those are the places in the retail market.
Indeed. I mean,
there's still appetite there. There are people still buying things. They're just buying differently.
Yeah, indeed. You're hardly going to rock up in the office in the New Year, hey, I'm wearing a Next suit. I mean, no disrespect, but no. I have a Next suit. I've bought Next suits in the past, but
everyone has.
It's just a functional suit.
Yeah. It's one of the big challenges that Marks and Spencer has really identified already, and they talk a lot about it. Whether they're actually going to make any progress on it remains to be seen, but one of Steve Rowe's big missions there is to improve quality relative to price.
At M&S,
which I think has been a problem for M&S, but I wonder if it's starting to be a problem for Next as well.
I think you're right.
If they're pushing the prices up northwards of, say, £45 just for a simple, I don't know, polo shirt or something, but the quality isn't stacking up in any kind of measurable way relative to that price increase, people are going to notice, and they're not going to stand for it.
I mean, it's true. I'm going to get all anecdotal here, as I am wont to do on these podcasts. But I've had a few Marks and Spark suits over the years. I've had a few Next suits. In the past, you could go into Marks and Spencer's and you could, for 100, 150 quid, you could buy a decent wool suit. That got you to work. And not looking like an idiot. And the same with Next. But actually, M&S, I would argue that for the same wool suit that I could buy 5 years ago for 100 quid, I'm now being asked for 200 quid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not paying it.
No. I think, and also, M&S, the big thing with M&S is that their customers were arguing that although the prices are rising, the quality was sliding.
Well, lots of polyester is going into those suits.
Yeah, to me, that smacks of moving labour around. And this is something that Next has also said it's done, which worries me even more. In terms of their cost base, every cost base for retailers is on the up, as we know. But Next has said, don't worry, because alongside price increases, we're also going to cut costs. And we've already moved our labour to places like Bangladesh. To me, that suggests that quality might be taking a bit of a dive.
Well,
I don't know. Speculation.
Well, no, because Bangladesh, we know, has been a low-cost manufacturing centre for a number of retailers, including Primark, for example. Mm-hmm. We know that there have been problems with some of those manufacturing facilities in countries like that. There was a terrible disaster at Bangladesh manufacturing site that Primark were involved in.
Yeah.
It begs the question.
How
low can you go?
Yeah. I think the important thing to really note about the Next trading update, though, is that these problems are sort of inherent to Next. And I think some of the commentary yesterday was really trying to find a sort of structural meaning in the update in terms of what this means for the high street, what this means in terms of consumer sentiment, consumer spending for 2017. And I think that might be jumping the gun ever so slightly. John Lewis, for example, also came out yesterday, not a listed company, so they don't make it into our coverage as much. But
well, they do publish figures.
They
so
do
we
publish
know what
figures,
they're doing.
And the sales there rocketed over Christmas, up 36%. Huge demand for click and collect, big demand for Waitrose as well.
It's funny, actually. Go on, Algie.
Well, no, I was just going to say another interesting aspect from the shareholder point of view with Next. If they're going to have to start investing a lot in the business to try and get back their mojo, whatever you call it.
Mojo's good.
Part of the story with Next is always that it returns a lot of capital. And a lot of its EPS increases are based on the fact that it buys back shares. Mm. So you're looking at a situation where it may need to put cash back into its operations, which has a kind of, so there's another dimension to what it means for the actual share returns in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned in your intro to the tips of the year feature that buybacks are potentially a sign of sort of end of cycle.
Well, I think we cut that out in the end.
Well, we didn't cut it out. I nicked it at the editorial. But no, it's interesting that buybacks have powered EPS growth at some businesses for some time.
Yeah.
And actually, they may themselves reach a limit.
I mean, Next is not guilty of doing that in a cynical way, it should be said. But yeah, no, but it's a sign that we're quite far into the credit cycle when there's lots of M&A and there's lots of buybacks and that we've definitely seen all of that. So, I mean, you have to wonder, what does that mean for this year?
Indeed. I mean, let's get back to retail before we diverge from what we were talking about. I mean, so next, we think these are specific problems to Next then.
I do. It's a very specific strategy. They came out swinging in the middle of last year, the moment that we voted to leave the EU and Sterling took a dive.
But then Wolfson is a very big supporter of leaving the EU.
Well, I mean, be that as it may, I don't know whether he's regretting that now, but well, actually, in fairness, ahead of the vote, he actually was sort of hinting at this already, because of course we'd had the introduction of the new living wage, which had pushed up cost bases for a number of retailers, Next included. But at the time, it was very moderate. It was, you know, price increases were kind of come through at 1% a year. I don't know if the Next customer would really have noticed that. Year to year, but now it's more serious. Obviously, their input costs have gone up massively, thanks to the currency weakness. And in terms of price rises, they might be much more dramatic than first thought. And that's where we come back round in a full circle to what we've been saying.
Indeed. So, I mean, you know, Algie, you alluded to this idea of the squeezed middle. So these middle ground retailers are the ones that are going to get hit the most. We've been here before. And Harriet, you've rounded some of these retail challenges, more generic retail challenges, up in the new spotlight this week.
Yeah.
The squeezed middle is an interesting one, because we also had some news from B&M European Value Retail this week. And they did very well.
They did do very well. It was a big surprise in sort of the opposite way to Next. The shares rocketed about 7.5% in early trading in reaction. I've been very sceptical of B&M for a long time. I thought that their new store opening programme was extremely accelerated to the point where it was cannibalising the existing estate sales. So like-for-likes were really, really thin, 0.2%, I think, in the preceding quarter to this. However, that seems to have really run its course.
Up is up as well.
Yeah, and like-for-likes are up 7.2% over the festive period, which is absolutely massive for them. So,
what are they selling?
Yeah.
Tinsel, cheap wrapping paper.
Indeed. I think the thing that is sometimes misunderstood about discounters is that, and Algie and I were talking about this yesterday, is that margins are often thought of to be razor thin. And they're not, actually. What the discounters do have to tackle with is that they have a little less flexibility on price. They're not able to sort of adjust that top line quite as easily as someone like Next, for example, although Next is limited too. So that's kind of the risk you run. But yeah, it might be time to relook at B&M and think again.
Okay, I must admit, I've got into the value food retail this year, because my Lidl's open now. Loving it.
Well, yeah,
loving it.
We had a very interesting note through from the guys at Shorecap, and they've done a big preview on supermarkets for this year, but I won't go into that now. We'll save that for the FTSE 350 review, I think.
One thing I will say about my experiences of shopping at Lidl over Christmas is that they don't have a massive range of stuff.
No.
So a lot of things that I want to buy every week, I still have to go to Sainsbury's.
Yeah, it's one of their secrets of keeping the cost down, limited ranges.
Yeah, limited ranges.
And so, we've kind of seen Tesco slightly moving in that direction, haven't
they? They've still got more stuff than Lidl.
They have got a lot more stuff than Lidl, yes. Without a doubt.
No, but I like it. I kind of like wandering around Lidl. Oh, look at that thing that they've only got for a week or two. I just kind of like it. It's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, convenience...
Is it a novelty thing? I don't know.
I don't know. I think convenience and availability are going to be some of the two biggest driving forces for supermarkets for a while to come.
Tesco's had a wonderful year. I mean, yeah. In share price
40%
terms.
Over the last 12 months.
And we went with Sainsbury's, but never mind. Hold that against you, Harriet.
Well, no, we sounds like you do. But anyway, no, Sainsbury's was a bit blown out of the water, unfortunately. We had a pretty sound argument at the time, and 3 weeks into that tip, they announced their home retail deal, which kind of changed the investment case.
It really did.
We stuck as buyers.
It did all right.
We will see how it goes. I mean, we'll get on to what actually happened with the market.
Indeed. Should we just finish retail before we move on? So, five retail challenges for the year ahead. We talked about the squeeze middle.
Yeah.
I buy that. And I think Marks & Spencer's, personally, I think they're still in it.
Yeah, they are still in it. I think there's still, however, quite a lot of faith in Steve Rowe. Sentiment doesn't appear to have completely disappeared. And actually, the shares have largely gone sideways since last summer, which is good for M&S. They'd been on a downward trajectory for some time. So
they had a disastrous trading update in terms of their general merchandise and clothing business.
Yeah, that was in July. But, I mean, we kind of said that. I think we tipped it around May.
No, it was towards the end of the year they had an equally disastrous update.
Yeah, but the shares have come back since then. I think people are optimistic. So it remains to be seen.
Okay, I don't see why. The food business is what I see keeping that business going.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have a trading update this month, obviously, for the festive period, and food will undoubtedly carry them in that period. But everyone knows, everyone's well aware by this point that clothing and home is in recovery. So.
I spent £20 on a chocolate cake for Marks & Spencer's this Christmas. It was one in the adverts. Had a little green Christmas tree in the middle of it.
How much could you got that from Lidl for?
They didn't sell it.
It was
very specifically, my wife said, I want that for the Christmas table this Christmas. I'm not paying £20 for... And then I did.
There it is.
The Christmas guilt's kicked in.
Christmas guilt.
Rocked up with a Christmas cake. She was very happy. Consumer sentiment.
Yeah.
Now, so everyone sort of thought, oh, yeah, next. It's a sign that consumer sentiment is in the doldrums. Actually, consumer credit is booted. I mean, it's going through the roof.
It is.
And we've seen things like Lloyds wanting to buy MBNA and all sorts of deals in the credit card space. I mean, you know, consumers are borrowing to spend.
They are, but there's a lot of talk at the moment as well how that cycle might turn quite quickly. It's been longer than previous sort of cycles before it, but yeah, we're living on a bit of a knife edge with it. The problem with consumer sentiment, which is something I point out in the piece, is that it's really quite a difficult thing to measure in a quantitative term. So we pay quite a lot of attention to the GfK Consumer Confidence Index, which... I think the last time I looked at it was not that long ago. It was towards the end of the summer, and it was at a 12-month low. However, since then, we have had Christmas, which tends to bring out, you know, the consumer best in us. And with promotional...
Or worse, depending
on your moral ethics. But, you know, things like the Black Friday bonanza, personal feelings aside, you know, it has been a stimulus. And I wrote a big feature on that, actually, at the time, in terms of it's kind of crazy that retailers have to start their most important trading period of the year at their lowest prices. But what it does do is it kicks off an extended shopping period now. Whereas before we might have started shopping in sort of second week of December, we're at it now from middle of November. So,
and Boxing Day, I mean, Boxing Day is a big day for shopping now. Christmas Day online?
Christmas Day online. Most of the sales actually started before Christmas. I can remember going out on the 19th of December this year, which was a Monday, and most of the shops I visited were already in sale mode.
Insane. So, I mean, online, I mean, we've talked about that a lot.
Rather than sort of like do the whole online argument, I've started to use a bit more of this term of smart shopping, which is one of the biggest challenges that retailers face from online pure plays.
I think it's a good definition, actually.
Yeah,
that's right.
Is that something we mentioned on the Retail podcast, which was released last year as well, is that, you know, shoppers are savvier than ever. They're able to do all their own research, not just on price, but also on quality, on functionality, whatever it is you're shopping for. And they go into shops more educated than ever, and they're ready to purchase. You know, it's in terms of the sales, you know, the traditional sales associate, they're almost obsolete at this point.
You know what? I mean, I was going to say earlier, I read my local newspaper, being a newsman and trying to keep local news alive. And, you know, I saw a story about local high street retailers from my town saying they've had a great Christmas.
Yeah.
Is the high street coming back?
Ooh, I mean, it's such a difficult question, because I think it means you almost got to boil it down to which high street. I think there's almost this trend now, isn't there, for sort of the quaint high street independent retailers. But if you're talking about a generic sort of department store, depending on how well populated that high street is with other generic high street chains, you still might struggle. You know, I think there's a very middle class, something that Harry Wallop talked about a lot in his book. He gives all of these various definitions of people. But, you know, there is the trend to go to local butchers and local booksellers and all of this. To what extent that lasts, I don't know.
Yeah, it's nice, though.
It's nice.
I must admit, I bought a lot of my Christmas presents locally this year.
I think people feel good about it. And there is this moral backlash that we're seeing actually as a whole in retail, particularly around wages and the way that employers treat their employees. That's something that Ian Smith wrote about in his Taking Stock article just before Christmas as well, in terms of how that's becoming much more of a moral issue and one that people are taking quite seriously, and it might be quite damaging.
Okay, so we must have some more trading statements coming up.
Oh, we've got a plethora.
The kind of schedule then? Who's next?
Well, next week is really a supermarkets week.
We've got
Morrison's Tuesday, I think Tesco, Sainsbury's Wednesday, Tesco and Booker on Thursday. So, yeah, big week for supermarkets next week.
Yeah, Morrison's, I've got to say. I mean, they've had a good year in share price terms, but...
Sneaky recovery. I don't think anyone saw it coming, really. You would have had to pay for it, same way as you're having to pay for the Tesco recovery if you want those shares. But yeah, I mean, surprise outperformer. Done really well. David Potts doesn't get nearly as much credit as Dave Lewis, but there you go.
Indeed. I must admit, not convinced by Morrison still, as a shopping experience.
Yeah, they've been... What I like about Morrison's is they seem to have no shame in doing the whole if you can't beat them, join them approach, which is specifically referring to their tie-up with Amazon. They've been embroiled in this Ocado deal for years now, but last year they made a big decision to go into a supply and distribution agreement with Amazon as part of their delivery fresh service for Prime members. And I think that's kind of set another tone for the industry, which probably puts Ocado back in the shadows.
Just looking at next Thursday, Debenhams.
Yep.
Ooh.
By tip. New boss.
Yeah.
Sergio.
Lots of sales. It's a perma sale at Debenhams.
It is a perma sale, but I think you and I spoke actually quite positively on Debenhams in the retail podcast.
I quite like it, but it's just, I just see that blue. I get so many emails from them. I once bought something online, get an email every day. Blue Cross Tuesday, Blue Cross Wednesday.
Well, people love a promotion, and I think if, I don't know, I suppose it's what we were talking about right at the beginning of the podcast. If the quality is stacking up, then people will go for it.
Is it? And Marks and Spencer's as well. And ABF, actually, which will give us a view of Primark trading.
So, Primark, yeah. Brad will be handling that one. But,
There we go. Right. Exciting week next week.
Indeed.
Have fun. should we talk? I mean, we've talked about Sainsbury's very briefly, which was one of our tips of last year, which I mean, it was a good performance, I would say. In the grand scheme of things, considering that it shocked the market with this surprise home retail acquisition. But let's talk more generally about our tips of the year. Algae.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, Sainsbury's, you know, it was slightly a case of being wrong for the right reasons, I'd say. I mean, I'm turning to the page where we've got all the
wrong for the right
actual,
reasons.
We were trying to play the supermarket recovery story. We went for the safer bet, so that meant there was less recovery upside, although it looked better value on paper against earnings, but yeah, it had less far to go. But
it was our
it should have participated more in that recovery, but for that acquisition, which the market still seems somewhat uncertain about, really, about where to place it. But,
it is odd. It was. It's still odd. I'm kind of with the market on this one because it does feel odd.
There was a comment from a manager of Scottish Mortgage who backs things like Amazon, etc. And they're big into all those real unicorn type companies. And he said that you could hear the giggling from Silicon Valley when.
Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley. That's where they make the ice creams.
I can see why Amazon might have been tittering.
We have to wait and see how it all plays out. I mean, there's obviously savings there to be had. But, what we had, we underperformed the market for the first time since 2010 with our tips of the year.
Not by much.
Well, it was a total return of 15.2% on average, which sounds good, and especially if you've been away from the resources sector during this year.
Yeah, because
we did
play it safe. I mean, you talk about playing it safe with Sainsbury's, we played it safe generally by avoiding resources.
Yeah, I mean, where we were when we were making the decision on where to, go with the tips of the year last year was that there's still a lot of negative sentiment about the resources sector. And it actually felt quite easy to say, listen, we won't go there because there's such negative price momentum. There's a lot of, really negative comment. And it's, although we realised it could turn very fast, there seemed to be nothing suggesting it was going to at that point. And who knew when it was going to? It did in mid-February after a savage kind of final sell-off. It kind of hit the bottom and then that part of the market's gone ballistic ever since. And the weighting it has in the index means that it's been, exaggerated in terms of the entire index performance compared to an equal weighted portfolio, which is how we assess the tips of the year.
Indeed. So oil companies did very oil and gas and mining companies did very well after February. Really fantastic. Well, because those companies are so huge, it obviously dragged the market up.
And also the gains are so huge. The gains are, amazing with some of them. We've got what I did was just to break down the all share from the beginning of the year and put together the distribution curve, which we've got in the magazine. So where you're likely to see, where you're most likely to see returns. And you've got this.
It's a bell curve.
A bell curve,
mostly.
Except, yes, at the end, I've got an over 100% bar at the end. And that's like really quite big compared to all the other bars.
But it's kind of a distribution that shouldn't happen under normal circumstances. With that bit at the end. Yeah, it shouldn't happen.
It's a long tail. Isn't that what they call it?
Well, it's different to a long tail. Listen, I'm no statistician, but that's not a normal. It's a fat tail. That's for sure. That's not a normal distribution curve with that at the end.
No, we've had a special market in terms of how it looks from the perspective of a weighted index compared with how it would look viewed from an equal weighted. Index and but also it's important though just to remember that in previous years when resources stocks were falling so badly, it's actually been the opposite. So I mean to make excuses when we always kind of generally compare ourselves to the all share, that's been an advantage for the tips of the years in past years, and it's not been this year. So you know, ho hum. But I mean, I think the main thing is that the total return. 15.2%, even though it compares to 19.8% from the FTSE All Share, it's not actually too bad. It's not. I think it's 2014 when we had Zambeef in our tips, and it's terrible. And I felt that was although we ended up beating the market just about that year, that was a far worse selection of tips because of that one shocker.
Yeah.
This year we've had Lloyds is the one which has gone most wrong in terms of share price. That's a 7.8% negative total return.
And again, that's wrong for the right reasons.
Well, that's
oh God, that sounds so awful.
Yeah, which way around should have been? A lot's gone right. A lot of what we hoped would happen with Lloyds has happened. We've just re-tipped it in the last magazine, I think, just because we feel like, you know, that. There's a good income story there, which this year with yields starting to rise, people could really latch onto. And we felt that should have been given more credit during this year, but I mean there've also been all the negatives that in a way we were expecting with Lloyds to do with fines, etc. And a few things haven't come off, but the general picture with Lloyds has been pretty much as we'd hoped.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of...
Except for the shares.
Except the shares are down 7.8%.
Yes.
I mean, it kind of feels also like the kind of... We took a punt on that in a way that we didn't with oil and gas and mining. You know, banking was still in a bit of a difficult place. We called the recovery, and it is the recovery tip of the year. We were trying to catch a falling knife before it bounced, and it didn't work out.
Well, what we were trying to do, because remember, there was an interest rate rise in the US the same time as there was this year, and that happened last year. And actually, the expectation for rates were not what we ended up having. Also, with the banks, and this is why banks are doing so well now, especially in the US, where interest rate expectations really ticking up.
Not in Europe, though.
Well, in Europe, they come. You know, we're seeing the banking shares come back now, but they've done so much to rebuild their capital base, and that was one of our key things with Lloyds, and it is again in the tip that we've just done. They've got a capital base, which means this is like really quite a secure business. You know, there are fines, but also even those seem to be coming to an end, and they can pay really quite solid looking dividends off the back of it, and you know. Dividends which are worth having.
Yeah. Brexit hit a couple of the tips. Or Brexit.
Yes.
The
yeah.
Brexit vote. Well, Lloyd's being one of them, but there were a couple of others that got hit
New,
by that.
New
well.
River. That got hit, but it's been paying good yields, which is what we were after.
But below the market in terms of its performance. It's a landlord.
Yeah.
It's a commercial landlord.
Yeah.
It's a good business.
And it buys underperforming property and tries to, you know, spruce it up and turn it around.
But not a lot of property companies did very well in 2016.
No, it's been about, yeah.
Because of the fears over what would happen once Britain leaves Europe.
Absolutely. And we've yet to see those fears come to anything tangible. But, I mean... Although it's hugely politicised saying anything about what may happen to the economy at the moment, I mean, we don't know is the honest answer, and there could be negative implications.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, domestically, it's, you know, for a period, it's more likely they're going to be negative than positive, the implications.
Having said that, a lot of property companies have bounced back quite sharply since the big falls post the referendum.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. And also we have MJ Gleeson, which has been doing well. It's been doing what it does, building very affordable homes. It looks very much like it's in the place where you'd want to be in the housing market at the moment. But that hasn't been very impressive either, and Brexit was a big dent to sentiment there.
Yeah, house builders. I mean, house builders, again, it's like retail in some respects. I think people are very worried about the prospects for the house building sector and, of course, the valuations after a very strong run across the house building sector. So we had some bad news, bad-ish news, before the new year from Bovis on the house building front, which we would suggest was a timing issue, but the market interpreted as a sign that, that this was a sector that had finally fallen out of bed, just like they were trying to interpret next statement as a sign that retail has fallen completely out of bed.
It's just being nervous and looking for that bad news, which is going to be the hallmark that it's all, the party's over. As you say, it hasn't those two cases. It doesn't look like it really, it is that, but
sentiment is a powerful force in investing.
It's a jumpy market.
It's a jumpy market. So yeah, never mind. But we got some things right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, those also, I don't want to be too down on these tips because they're not a bad bunch. RPC did very well. That was,
packaging.
That's packaging, big acquirer. There was a big acquisition at the end of, 2015, which we really liked. And it's done very well from that. It's been buying a lot more since. I mean, there's the question of how, there's a consolidation story in the European packaging sector. There's a question of how much, this company can actually acquire before it kind of, things start to come unstuck. Anyway, people like the story a lot. And I've seen quite a few brokers put it as their stock of the year this year, RPC. Appena Consulting, that was textbook. That was our takeover tip of the year. The only thing not textbook about it, we had two things we really liked about it. We thought there are more upgrades coming through, and we thought there was an aging chairman with a lot of shares, and we thought he may want to sell out. And there'd been acquisitions of similar companies in Europe. So it had an upgrade just before the tip came out, so we missed out on about, almost 10%.
Well, that would have brought us into line with the all share then.
Yeah, no, it probably would have.
Probably would have, wouldn't it?
Kind of like a match. It was one of those awful, galling things. We put a little bit on the online article. We couldn't put it in print because it happened after the copy went to the printers and before the magazine was out. So anyway, it still made a 31% total return because it was bought by Adecco really early in the year. I think in March.
That should have held out for more.
Well, yeah, but the chairman, the chairman had basically, I think he wanted to. It was an agreed bid. So that went well. Walt Disney, that went right for the wrong reasons. That was all to do with the dollar.
What did we think was going to happen?
We just thought, this is an amazing business. It's got the Star Wars franchise now. It just keeps on, making money from these franchises.
Marvel.
And the problems at ESPN. This is where we were wrong. We don't think there's that much to worry about, and we don't think the market will be that much more concerned about those problems. But actually, the market has been very concerned about ESPN, and actually, we've seen the shares tick up towards the end of last year because there's speculation that they could sell off ESPN, and then you'd just have the kind of great, this great Disney bit without that kind of sports cable TV bit.
Star Wars.
Everyone going mad for Star Wars, exactly.
It's just a huge franchise.
It's huge. As you say, they've done it with Marvel, doing it with Star.
I went to see it. Have you seen it? The new film?
Not yet. Not.
Listen, this is not the Mark Kermode and, review show, but I didn't like it very much. I thought it was a bit boring. that's the extent of my review.
Yeah, we Kermode won't be quaking his boots.
He won't.
BAE Systems, that's done very well.
Dollar earnings again.
Yep. Dollar earnings. More defence spending. And then Trump gave it a real boost.
Yeah.
Also, big pension deficit. There's a lot of worry about that earlier in the year. But obviously, as, bond yields go up, that deficit becomes less of an issue. So that has a positive impact on valuation.
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to tell you all what our tips of 2017 are. That would be foolish.
Nay.
You need to read that in the magazine. But there are some themes.
Yeah,
so, we had some ideas some strategies that we wanted to put in play at the beginning of 2016. What are we thinking about in 2017? What's guided our picks?
We've kind of some of the themes which have been developing last year, and some of the themes with the Trump election we're trying to play, and likewise, and when I said that, that's essentially we've got quite a bit of exposure to the oil and gas and commodities markets, but some of it's kind of you know, through the back door, as it were, companies with which aren't at, well, there's one company which is involved directly in the oil and gas business, but there are others which kind of serve those markets or have had markets they serve impacted by the downturn in those markets, and we can just see that not really being priced in, that those they've taken action to address the downturn in demand, and really what you're getting is any potential upside in those, you know, probably not for free, but it's not, there's not a big price being put on it.
It's funny because generally the picks and shovels, which I guess is what we're talking about here, they tend to kind of precede the improvement in the kind of the underlying commodity markets, and this time they've kind of been left behind.
I think it depends where they are, and also what we're not seeing yet is there's lots of speculation that we'll see a pickup in capital expenditure, but we haven't seen it yet. So what we'd hope to see is with prices being more stable and higher, that people start to spend money on their actual businesses again. Whereas what lots of people have been doing is cutting back over recent years, selling things off and just, putting their horns in. Mm. But also with these kind of stocks, all you need really, because the market's always trying to look ahead, is for sentiment to improve, that type of thing may happen, for share prices to re-rate quite a lot. But then also on the other side of things, we're looking at some of these, and also we have a financial in there which should benefit, should yields keep on rising. But then we've also looked at a few stocks where we feel they've been unduly hit by the what people are calling the Great Rotation. I think it stands for a lot of things, but one of the aspects of it is that people are moving away from kind of reliable growth and into value. And there are some stocks which have been caught up in it, which just really actually look like value.
I was going to say, I look at these and they look like value stocks to me.
Yeah, I mean, we've got one stock which is kind of expensive, you know, on the bare face of its.
That's yours, isn't it, Harriet?
It is mine.
God, expensive tastes over there.
Maybe, but it's not expensive relative to its own history.
That's true.
That's the one tip, or one hint, I should say, that I'll give you.
Yeah. And this goes back to the old squeeze middle argument. It's not in that squeeze middle.
Yeah, exactly. No. But then we've got other companies which there's one in particular which stands out just as looking. You know, it's very cheap as a kind of, you know, it probably had the bond proxy label attached to it. And now we're just like, well, you know, that's a very good yield.
I looked at this one.
It's going to be ahead of inflation if they can deliver on what they're
I looked at this
promising.
One and I thought, my goodness, that's a no-brainer.
Well, that's a famous last word.
Last words from the editor.
And then also... you know, drugs companies we think look interesting because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, there are problems with the pricing in the drug market, and it's become very politicised, and ratings are down in that sector, and we just think maybe it's not going to be as bad as people think, and especially with innovative companies, and it's a very innovative company that we're targeting.
It's a US company.
Company, yeah. We think that there's a really good opportunity to buy there.
Okay, well,
fingers crossed.
Let's not give too much more away. I think we're running out of time as well. Anyway, thank you, Algie. Thank you, Harriet.
It's
been an interesting start to the year. It's really good to reflect actually on where we've been.
Yeah, and it kind of tells you where we're kicking off from. All we really have a lot of the time is hindsight, which we build our impressions of the, you know, year going forward on anyway.
Yeah, well, next year...
Forecast, as we know.
Actually, you say that. Philip's written the cover feature next week, which is about super forecasting. And we're going to tell you how to predict the future.
Excellent.
Yeah, no, seriously.
Excellent. Great news.
It's a very good book on that.
Anyway, thank you for listening. Lots more in the magazine this week. again, we were in a bit of a reflective mode. Nicole Elliott, the trader, has taken a very broad view of where we are in from a trading perspective with a number of indices and asset classes. Simon, we mentioned house builders earlier. He's kicked off his house builder trade again. Loves it. It's a new year house builder trade. And yeah, by all accounts, it's going gangbusters already. We got some great news from Persimmon earlier, which suggests that the house building problems people had kind of read into the Bova statement are not as structural as many had feared. Also, plenty in the personal finance and fund section, including our fund tips for 2017 and how the 2016 picks perform, as well as some New Year resolutions from the money section. I'm sure they'll be talking about those in detail on their podcast. A little bit more views from fund managers written up by Bradley Gerard on the prospects of inflation, for inflation and protectionism, which are going to be, I suspect, two of the big themes of the year ahead. And talking again of value, Chris Dillo has updated his no thought portfolios. These are very simple strategies, one of which is value, which has had a good year, but another is momentum. Mm-hmm. And momentum continues to power ahead. Well, it's just a strategy to end all strategies.
Also, interestingly, if only
there was a product based on this fantastic IC Momentum Index, which you can find on Bloomberg, produced in association with FTSE. There were a product based on it, you could play momentum with a very simple smart beats or ETF. But hey.
The other interesting thing about momentum, and one of the reasons why it outperforms, is that what it's doing is latching onto the value themes.
Yeah.
So it's in resources now, and it's in banks and financials.
It's a double whammy of value and momentum.
People think momentum's growth. It's actually, at the moment, if you're constructing a momentum portfolio, you're buying a value portfolio.
Wow. Like so.
That's how it does it.
Give us a shout if you're interested. Thank you, Harriet. Thank you, Algie. And thank you all for listening. And again, wishing you all a very happy new year. It's going to be an interesting one, but potentially a good one. Stock pickers year, I reckon. Stock pickers year. Anyway, if you haven't guessed already, the tips of the year issue, £4.90 in all good news agents, or get online and subscribe. Thank you very much. Speak to you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.